Jai.
ISKCON's Foundracharya Srila Prabhupada ki. Anant Gauri Vaishnav Vrinda ki. Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur ki. Prem Sengahos Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda ki. Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gop Gopinath Shamkund Radhakund Giddigova Dan ki. Shri Vrindavan Dham ki, Shri Mayapur Dham ki, Shri Jagannath Puri Dham ki, Shri Shri Radha Radhanath ki, Shri Giri Govardhan ki, Shri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur ki, Gaur Premanande, all glories to their Samo devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. All glory, oops, to Srila Prabhupada. Whoa, okay. It's a bit of a challenge sometimes. All right, here we are. Hare Krishna. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur ki. I hope you can all hear me. Can you hear me?
Yes, Ramana.
Thank you. I'll turn you on. Oh, no. Oh, no. It's going to crash. All right, so we're just about there. Hari Bol. Is this thing on or what? Is there sound? Can someone tell me if there's sound? Do you have sound there on Facebook? Can someone just tell me quickly? Have you got sound? You can hear me. Can you hear me okay? Because, oh, I see, it's around the wrong way. I could, yeah, we should turn it around. So I can't see the light, so it looks like it's off. But also the thing is on the other side. So today, devotees, is the appearance day of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and therefore we will focus, we'll focus on Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. We've got a light near here. Okay. We'll focus on Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur and some biographical details about his life and transcendental activities, very transcendental activities. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasnaya Bhutale Shivati Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namane Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharne Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pastya Chadesh Tarne Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Vanchakalpatarubhyascha kripa sindhubhya eva cha paditanam bhavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. Yeah, it's just having a bit of a revolution.
You can.
Okay, you may have to restart the computer. Oh, well, we could try one more time. So, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur appeared in this world on this day in 1838. 1838, so, well, what's that now? It's almost 100, or it's more than, it's 182 years ago. Yeah, audio settings.
Oh, okay. Just making sure the mic's
on. Okay. Turn that down. That's it. Right. On this very day, 182 years, isn't it? Yeah, 182 years ago. And he was brought up. We won't focus so much on his childhood and upbringing and all that, but he was brought up in a family. Some were devotees, some were not so much. One of his grandfathers was a very serious devotee, very nice devotee, who in his childhood took Bhaktivinoda Thakur, at that time known as Kedarnath Dutt, on a tour of the Vaishnav pilgrimage places in Orissa and sort of southern Bengal, that sort of area. Because yeah, the family was living at that time more in Orissa. Yes. Well, Orissa and Mayapur area, the birthplace of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur is in a village called Biyanagar, which is in between Calcutta and Mayapur. It's close to Mayapur, but it's some distance from Mayapur. And his birthplace is there. The house, they say, where he was brought up is there. His Gorgadadha deities are there. There's, who is it now? He's a son, a disciple of one of the other, not Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, but Lalita Prasad, who was the youngest son of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He's there. Well, he lived there. One of his disciples is there running that place. Very pleasant fellow and interesting place. So that, yes, that's not far from Ranagat, actually, if one is familiar with the Mayapur area and the famous road from between Calcutta and Mayapur. Just off that road a little way. And he was brought up in this family. One of the grandfathers was a devotee. Other family members were not so much devotees, or just plain, you could say, Hindu-type people. So his upbringing in that sense was quite different from the upbringing that Srila Prabhupada had, that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur had, who was, of course, the son, most prominent and dynamic son of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Yes. So his upbringing was definitely different, not like a real classic Vaishnav, Gaudiya Vaishnav upbringing. At the age of 12, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur was married to a five-year-old girl, and he schooled, and he was a very serious student at school, and as time went on, he developed an interest in Krishna consciousness. He got some association, the one grandfather, and some other devotees. At the time, Gaudiya Vaishnavism was not doing well. The Sahajya influence and related, the upper Sampradaya influence was really very predominant. And therefore, to get the association of bona fide Gaudiya Vaishnavas, really serious, sincere practitioners of Krishna consciousness in the real line of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Lord Nityananda, this was not easy at all. And Srila Prabhupada makes the point that Gaudiya Vaishnavism at that time in Bengal, which is the place, at least the home of Gaudiya Vaishnavism, it had a bad reputation in different ways. And one of the main ways was, of course, because of the Sahajiya Upper Sampradaya influence, there was a lot of illicit activity going on in the name of Gaudiya Vaishnavism, even amongst people who were at least accepted as being prominent leaders in the Gaudiya Vaishnav tradition. Oh yes, some of the most prominent, if not the great majority actually, of the prominent leaders in what was known as Gaudiya Vaishnavism were really degraded, frankly, really degraded, particularly illicit sex life and intoxication. And particularly those two, maybe particularly illicit sex, but particularly those two. Fish eating was very prominent. What do they call it? Jalafal. Jalafal. The fruit of the water. Oh, Krishna. Oh, it's just a shame. So, but somehow Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur Kedarnath Dutt at that relatively younger age, means after leaving school, finishing his education, he had some good association and developed a real interest in Lord Chaitanya. And therefore he decided that he must get a copy of Chaitanya Charitamrita. He was trying to locate one. He only managed to locate one in 1868, means he was already 30 years old, in Bengal, the home of Gaudiya Vaishnavism, living somewhere in the vicinity of where Lord Chaitanya had his pastimes, at least before taking sannyas. But he couldn't find a copy of Chaitanya Charitamrita, although he tried. Finally, he did find one. And that, of course, it's all Leela on one level, because we understand him to be an eternal associate of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who has appeared for the Lord's purposes, under the Lord's supervision, to develop the movement of Lord Chaitanya. But at least on the surface, at the age of 30, although already interested and practicing to some degree, but at the age of 30, he, having now read Chaitanya Charitamrita and regularly reading it, at least he says he became convinced of Lord Chaitanya as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And in other words, he really became activated as a devotee, very much activated. So he was, initially he worked, he was a family man, as we mentioned. Initially he worked as a teacher, and teaching English language, because somehow he taught himself English. He was self-taught in a number of languages, but including English, which was, of course, at the time, the language of the rulers, who really were in charge. So during his 20s, because of his being so highly educated and being very fluent in English, one of his friends or an associate arranged that he get a job with the government. Of course, teaching was with the government, but in the, I guess you'd call it, the Justice Department. And he started functioning as a, well, eventually it came to the point of functioning as a deputy magistrate, which was a very high position. All the highest positions, like to be an actual full magistrate and that sort of thing, and not just a deputy or assistant, all the higher positions were occupied by the British. Keeping control. Somehow keeping control of a country of hundreds of millions, Prabhupada said, with a community of 100,000. So he came up to the position of deputy magistrate at around that time, 1868, around the age of 30, or maybe just very slightly older, because in 1871, he was appointed as deputy magistrate for Jagannath Puri, which included the oversight of the Jagannath temple. So he was really the chief magistrate there, effectively. The British were more just supervising rather than directly hearing the cases and making rulings and so on. So he was basically the senior actual magistrate, hearing the cases and making the judgments in Jagannath Puri and for the surrounding areas. So, but like we said, he was already a very serious practicing devotee by this time. And his schedule, his program, is quite famous. His program was more or less as follows. He would get up, it's maybe a sort of funny way of putting it, but he would get up at 10 o'clock at night, and he would light his oil lamp and write until, generally till 4, means like 5 or 6 hours of writing every day. At 4 o'clock he would take, in the morning, 4 a.m., he would take rest till 4:30. At 4:30 he would get up, wash his hands and face, and chant japa. At 7 o'clock he would write letters till 7:30, when he would read. At 8:30 in the morning he would receive guests, if there were any to be received, or continue reading till 9:30, at which time he would take rest again. Sri Sri Radha Radhanath Sri Giri Govardhan Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu Ki Jai. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur Ki Jai. Right. At 9:30, he would take rest till 9:45. In other words, he was not doing a lot of sleeping. At 9:45, he would have his morning bath. You know, it's a very prominent practice, actually. I don't know, maybe in India in general, but you see it in the areas which we frequent, mainly Vrindavan, Vraj Mandal, and West Bengal, that people, so many people, don't take bath until the sun has risen, particularly in winter, they don't take bath till the sun has risen. I don't know about other areas, but it is quite prominent. So he'd have his morning bath, then he would have breakfast. Breakfast would be half a quart of milk. Is that a liter? Half a quart? 2 pints. Huh?
Half food they take snacks.
Oh, okay. Yeah, but I'm just thinking about the amount. A pint is about half a liter, I think. Anyway, yeah. And he would have a couple of chapatis and fruit. This is what we hear. And we're just doing a check on how much milk he drink.
473 milliliters.
Is one?
It's half a quart.
So, half a quart. Oh, so you'd have half a liter. Half a liter? Half a liter? That's quite a bit of milk. That's what it says. That's what the biography says. Half a quart of milk means half a liter. Sure. Okay. 2 chapatis and fruit. That's what they say. Then around 10, he would go to the court. In the court, he would wear coat and pants with double-sized tulsi neck beads and tilak. He was very strong in his decisions. He would decide immediately. As Prabhupada says, he did not allow any humbug in his court, which is a very old English way of saying, you keep your mouth closed unless they ask you to speak. And when, you know, they ask you, you keep to the point. No upstart could stand before him. He would shave his head monthly. He never allowed harmonium, and he never had any debts. That's a good one. He never had any debts. So right, at 10 the court began, and at 1 it finished. At 1 he'd go back home. Well, if you know where is, I don't know where the court is in Puri. Anyway, we know where the house is. So, he'd come home and take a bath, and then he wouldn't really eat. So he'd refresh himself, and at 2 o'clock, he would go back to the office, and if there are any further cases to hear, he would hear them. But often there would not be, because he was very quick. He was very quick to decide a case. So, if there were no cases, he would keep books, like Krishna conscious books. Of course, at home he had a whole library, but also in his office he had Vaishnav books. So if there was no case, or when he finished the cases for the afternoon, Then he would work on translation. At 5 o'clock, he'd come back home, take evening bath, and take his meal. He would take his meal around 5:30, sort of after taking bath and so on. And his meal would be rice, 2 chapatis, vegetables, and another half liter of milk. I think we better check that. But that's what it says. And then between 7:30 and 8, he would take rest. So his main sleeping time was from 7:30 or 8 till 10. Then at, what was it, 4 o'clock, he'd take half an hour. 9:30, he'd take 15 minutes. This is what the biography says. Yes, so there, when he was the deputy magistrate, some really important things happened. One was that, Srila Prabhupada explains, that he regulated the worship in the Jagannath temple. Up to that point, the worship, it was somewhat haphazard, because even in the minds of some people today, they're not quite sure who is Lord Jagannath. Yeah, they're people who are sort of prominent in Puri and here and there, who, they're not clear who is Jagannath. Is he Krishna? Is he Lord Shiva? Is he like a demigod or some sort of combination of a number of demigods? Or who is he? But Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur established, at least amongst the Vaishnavas, very clearly who is Lord Jagannath, and systematized the process of worship, how many bhoga offerings, at what times, what was offered, and all these types of things, which we hear, those standards are still to a large degree continued today. This is what we hear. Yes. But at that time, it was a very sort of volatile time. Politically, it was volatile. There was dissatisfaction with the British government. And occasionally, there were some, you know, attempts at some sort of revolutionary happening, none of which got very far, but there were attempts. And also religiously, it was very volatile, because even like now in India, religiously it's just so volatile. There's so many camps and so many groupings of people who feel that this is supreme or that is supreme, and this process or that process or some other is supreme. It was more volatile in those days because the influence of the Mayavadis was very strong, and amongst the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, the influence of the upper sampradayas of different types was extremely strong, we mentioned, extremely strong. And as Srila Prabhupada says, many respectable people felt that the Vaishnav sannyasis, or sannyasis, quote unquote, were just doing whatever they were doing just for the sake of getting charity and living. And what did Prabhupada say? A beggar's excuse. Something like that. A beggar's excuse for making a living. Yeah. And like Prabhupada says, when he was a child, in his neighborhood, like on their street, there was one man who, in the morning, when people were going to work, he would dress up as a sannyasi in saffron and beg. And then during the day, he would wear white because he was a local householder. Some sort of local householder. So it was really not good. It was really not good. So one of the things which was really not good, which Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur dealt with, what should we say? Maybe the first thing was that the king who at that time, of course he was backed by the British. If he had any difficulty, he could just call on the British and they would support him. But otherwise, he was basically the ruler of that area. And, you know, he had great freedom as the ruler to rule as he liked. So when Bhaktivinoda Thakur took over the administration of the Jagannath temple, the big temple, then he found that the records were showing that the king had been periodically borrowing money from the temple to maintain his lavish royal lifestyle. He had been borrowing, but on what they call, I don't know if they use the term here, borrowing on a no return basis. Do they use that terminology? In my youth, that was a famous phrase. Borrowing on a no return basis. He was not returning the money. And the debt was just going up and up. And I forget, there's a figure somewhere, but it was a substantial amount. Means probably the equivalent of millions nowadays. But, you know, he was the ruler, and no one could say anything. And, yeah, no one could say anything. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur did. He took it up as the deputy magistrate, the highest Indian-born official, government official in the area. He took it up and started to enforce it, that you have to return the money. So the king, in order to avoid this, the king started a puja, like a tantric puja, the result of which was meant to be that Bhaktivinoda Thakur would die when the last oblations were poured into the fire with the last mantras, he would drop dead. So this puja went on in the basement of the palace, which was completely dark, for I forget how long, but it was at least a week, 24 hours a day. And when the time came for the final oblations, the king and his family, or his sons, gathered around this big Yajna Havan Kund, a big one, which had really like a blazing fire going. And the last mantras were chanted, and then Swaha, and they put the offerings into the fire, and the ghee was poured, And suddenly the oldest son of the king collapsed into the fire, which was a fairly serious fire. And that was the end of him. And that was the end of the king's attempt to do something about Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So then Bhaktivinoda Thakur enforced it, and the king paid back the money. So that was one very dramatic incident that happened. Another one is the story of Bhishikeshen, very famous yogi. So this Bhishikeshen, from what we hear, he really had mystical powers, at least to some degree, had mystical powers. And he was also very anti the British. So, and because he had mystical powers and he was, you know, had charisma, he was extremely popular amongst the people in general. And in those days, people in general means just the village folks who were generally very religiously minded in one way or another, but really not educated at all. So he was invoking, trying to bring about a revolution against the British in that area. Plus, he was claiming to be the Supreme Personality of Godhead and displaying these mystical powers. So, because of the, well, at that, he was claiming to be God, and from what we hear, at that time in India, to claim to be God was illegal. It was against the law to claim to be God, unless you were God. If you were God, no problem. But if you weren't, it was illegal. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur was particularly concerned about the man in that way. But the British were concerned about his sort of revolutionary aspirations, so they told Bhaktivinoda Thakur to arrest him, which he did. But when he did, there was a real outcry, and, you know, there was almost like a bit of a revolution because of the arrest of this man. Thousands of his followers gathered outside the courtroom. So, from what we hear, because the man had mystical powers, well, for Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, for 21 days he did not eat or drink even a drop of water, but he did not show any weakness and gave unfailing cures to many people, because so many people would come with sicknesses and, you know, it's a standard practice amongst the yogis. You must cure people's weaknesses, sicknesses. So, as when he was arrested and then the court case started and he was held in custody, one of Bhaktivinoda Thakur's children, Kadambini, the pet name was Kadur, came down with a very serious fever. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, I obtained a lot of evidence against him. Yes, so then gradually more members of Bhaktivinoda Thakur's family also developed that serious fever type of illness. And even Bhaktivinoda Thakur himself, on the day he was to go to the court to pass sentence after the man was found guilty, Bhaktivinoda Thakur could not walk. He could not walk. His health was just so bad, which he assumed or understood to be because of the mystical powers of Vishakhasena. So, a young British officer, whose name I forget, Anderson, I think, who had been reading about the mystic powers of yogis and how they are often kept in their hair. Yes. He rushed up behind the yogi as he was being transported from the courtroom and cut off his matted locks with a huge pair of scissors. The yogi immediately fell to the floor, unable to walk. When his followers saw that he had been completely overcome simply by having his hair removed, they deserted him. And he died in jail, Vishakhasena. So, there you go, devotees. Time is up. We will continue, or probably restart also, at 4 o'clock. At 4 o'clock, South African time. Vepetchesov, Pomosquia, Vecherum, Dinyong. Programmer, Prodelja, it's our program will continue at 4. More Bhaktivinoda Thakur Katha. Hare Krishna. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur Ki. Hare Krishna.